It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 48 degrees with a few clouds. Bit of a breeze, the wind has been coming down. They are now showing south winds at 9 miles per hour at the airport. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies all day today, the first day of Crab Fest. And the weather doesn't look too shabby for the rest of Crab Fest either. They are calling for partly sunny skies at least through Sunday. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough School District has a new strategy to retain its temporary international teachers. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she thinks President Trump's strategy of going after members of his own party is strategically incorrect. And state and national advocates call for the relocation of two Western Alaska villages.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. President Trump vowed today the United States will recover Iran's stockpile of highly enriched uranium to stop Tehran from developing a nuclear weapon. He spoke to reporters at the White House earlier.
We will get it. We don't need it. We don't want it. We'll probably destroy it after we get it, but we're not going to let them have it.
Trump also criticized Iran's plans to charge fees at the Strait of Hormuz. The Pentagon puts the cost of Operation Epic Fury at $29 billion so far. But as NPR's Tom Bowman reports, the top Democrat on the Senate Armed Services Committee says costs may really add up to tens of billions more when accounting for lost aircraft.
The Congressional Research Service came out with a report recently, and it said that 42 fixed-wing and rotary-wing aircraft were lost so far in Operation Epic Fury, the attack on Iran. Among those are four F-15E Strike Eagle aircraft and seven KC-135 refueling aircraft, and also 24 Reaper drones.
NPR's Tom Bowman reporting. The Democratic National Committee has released a postmortem of its 2024 election defeats, but the party says it doesn't stand behind the unfinished report or its conclusions. NPR's Stephen Fowler has more.
DNC Chair Ken Martin received the 2024 autopsy late last year and announced he wouldn't publish it, opting instead to focus on the party's victories in recent elections. Now he's apologizing and has made the 192-page document public. The report, titled Build to Win, Build to Last, is incomplete, didn't include any source documents or data to verify its claims, and is not something the party stands by, Martin said. The disconnect with the DNC comes as voters have record low approval of the Democratic Party, but continue to vote for Democratic candidates in large numbers. Stephen Fowler, NPR News.
For the first time, a Planned Parenthood organization is prescribing abortion medication for patients who are not pregnant. NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin has the exclusive report on the service, which allows patients to have the medications at home in case they need them.
The new service is called Just In Case Abortion Pills, and it's being offered by Planned Parenthood Great Northwest, Hawaii, Alaska, Indiana, and Kentucky. Rebecca Gibran is the CEO.
As evidence supporting this model of care has continued to grow, and with supportive policy environments in Washington and in Hawaii, this really is the right time for us to step into this space.
The service is available to residents of Washington and Hawaii. They can get it via telehealth or in person at 16 health centers. Demand for getting abortion medication to have on hand spikes when abortion restrictions are in the news. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News.
This is NPR News in Washington.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak Island Borough School District is offering a new incentive to retain its temporary international teachers. This is after the Trump administration priced the district out of international recruiting last year through a massive visa fee hike. Now, as KMXT's Davis Hubby reports, the district wants to sponsor these teachers to get green cards, permanent legal residency, for about $10,000 each.
Assistant Superintendent Kim Saunders says that if the school district does not pay for green cards now, then it will have to pay even more later when the international teachers' work visas expire and they cannot be immediately rehired.
And if we want them to be able to stay past that visa status, this is our only option, right? It's the only way we can stabilize.
Especially in the district's hard-to-staff rural schools, where she says 8 teachers are currently on visa status. Saunders says the green card application process costs about $10,000 per person over 2 years. On April 20th, the school board unanimously approved setting aside an additional $100,000 for that cost, enough for up to 20 teachers to begin the process. The process to obtain a green card itself can take 3 years. Out of roughly 150 teachers total, district records show that it currently has 26 teachers who were international recruits with H-1B visas, which allow them to legally work and live in the U.S. for up to 6 years. School board member Duncan Fields says the district's international teachers are professionally qualified and paying for their permanent residency is cost-effective compared to recruiting, hiring, and training new teachers.
And we see from the materials presented and from long-term discussion that those costs are anywhere between $20,000 to $25,000 per new hire for this district.
A 2017 study by researchers at the University of Alaska Anchorage's Institute of Social and Economic Research found that the average cost of a teacher turning over in Alaska was a little over $20,000. But former Kodiak High School teacher John Parker told the school board on April 20th that the district could put that money toward recruiting and retaining domestic teachers instead.
It seems somewhat, however, disingenuous to pay thousands for visas and green card fees to hire a foreign teacher to teach in our school. Yet there's no consideration for an incentive for an American applicant.
Parker suggested contributing to non-visa teachers' retirement accounts or paying for schooling for advanced teaching degrees. Saunders told KMXT that the district already puts money towards those kinds of incentives, like the Grow Your Own program.
We've been paying tuition for our own educators who are on the classified side to become certified teachers for years because we are attempting to grow our own teachers. That takes upwards of 10 years.
The district's new green card incentive comes with strings attached. Saunders says the teachers must work in the district for 5 more years after their green cards are issued, maintain valid teaching certifications and endorsements, and stay in good standing with the district. If a teacher leaves the district or their contract is terminated within the 5 years, then they agree to reimburse the district for some of the costs. The money for the green cards is coming out of the school district's employee benefits fund, which still has hundreds of thousands of dollars left for this fiscal year, according to budget documents. Saunders said much of that money is still very likely to go unspent. She says she knows some eligible international teachers do not plan to stay in Kodiak long term.
I've heard 3 no's so far for different reasons, and so we'll see what happens.
Several of the district's teachers from the Philippines told KMXT they don't feel comfortable sharing their decision-making around this green card incentive. Some said it's personal. Others said they faced backlash and even racism from community members on social media. Saunders says the district is hiring some incoming Coast Guard members and spouses to help fill some of these soon-to-be vacant positions for next school year. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
Lawmakers in the state and national capitals implored their colleagues this week to help 2 Western Alaska villages relocate to safer ground after a devastating storm last year. State House member Nellie Jimmy represents Kipnuk and Quiguillengok. Homes were set adrift there when the remnants of Typhoon Halong struck in October. Jimmy described caskets being unearthed. She urged the legislature to pass a resolution to support the community's decision to reestablish themselves. Jimmy said both communities have voted to relocate.
That sentence does not come close to carry the weight of what it actually means to say. It means accepting that your land your family has known for thousands of years is gone. The water didn't just take our homes. It took our dead.
The Alaska House passed the resolution Tuesday without opposition. It urges the governor to develop a relocation framework. It also calls on Alaska's congressional delegation to restore and expand federal funding for community relocation and oppose cuts to disaster relief for villages. In the U.S. Senate on Wednesday, Senator Lisa Murkowski also asked for the federal government to better support Kipnuk and Kwigilingok. Murkowski recalled meeting a 6-year-old storm evacuee in an Anchorage shelter who was making a drawing of her house.
And then she kind of hugs my leg and she says, "Are you afraid of the dark?" And I said, "No, I'm not afraid of the dark. Are you afraid of the dark?" And she said, "I didn't used to be, but now I am."
The girl had been in one of the homes that was carried away by the storm waters. Murkowski says she doesn't know that 6-year-old's trauma will ever go away. The senator says the government needs a more coordinated response for disaster relief and relocation and to make its programs easier for small villages to navigate. Senator Lisa Murkowski said on Tuesday that President Trump has made a strategic mistake in working to oust two of her Republican colleagues. And she sounded doubtful of two controversial Trump projects, his White House ballroom and a new compensation fund for people he deems victims of a weaponized Justice Department. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin has this report.
Murkowski says Trump has hurt his chances of advancing his priorities through Congress.
Maybe he doesn't think he needs us, but I don't know. Last I checked, the laws don't just appear before his desk to sign.
Republican Senator Bill Cassidy lost his Louisiana primary this week after Trump endorsed a MAGA-aligned challenger. Now Trump has endorsed scandal-prone Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton in that state's GOP primary. Murkowski was incensed to learn from a reporter in a Senate hallway that Vice President J.D. Vance denigrated the incumbent, Senator John Cornyn, at a White House briefing.
Paxton is a crook and a corrupt individual. John Cornyn, oh my goodness, in terms of an upstanding individual, a lawmaker, a former judge, I can't think of anybody who is just, again, more upstanding.
No matter what happens in the Texas election, Murkowski points out that both Cornyn and Cassidy will still be senators until January. Cassidy is already showing a new independence. Just days after losing his primary, he voted to advance a resolution to end the war with Iran. Murkowski says it's a sign that he doesn't feel obligated to support Trump's agenda anymore.
The president may have just open some opportunities for people.
Murkowski, Cassidy, and Senator Susan Collins of Maine are the only remaining Republican senators who voted to convict Trump after his 2021 impeachment. The Alaska senator sounded skeptical Tuesday of Trump's $1 billion security proposal for his White House ballroom project and a nearly $1.8 billion fund to compensate people he believes were wrongly prosecuted by the Biden administration.
I'm calling it right now the litigation slush fund because I am looking for more parameters to it. To really understand how it might be used in a beneficial and a fair way. But I have a lot more questions than I have answers today.
Murkowski is among two or three Republicans who sometimes vote against Trump's positions. She says his decision to take down two GOP senators may have freed them to cross the aisle. That would allow Democrats to prevail more often. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Alaska legislature kicks off a special session today to continue working on tax cuts for the Alaska LNG project. Governor Mike Dunleavy called the special session on Tuesday after lawmakers failed to act on the bill he introduced in late March. Whether lawmakers will be able to find a way forward is unclear. Lawmakers are hesitant to give up billions of dollars in potential property tax revenue for a project they're not confident will lower energy costs or boost the state treasury. Dunleavy says tax relief is essential if the project is to go forward. The special session comes a day after lawmakers adjourned their regular session. Lawmakers approved a $1,000 permanent fund dividend and a number of measures aimed at helping Alaskans and their communities deal with high oil prices. Those include a $200 energy relief payment to each PFD-eligible Alaskan, plus millions to help schools, local governments, and low-income families deal with the high cost of energy. Lawmakers also passed a variety of high-priority bills on the last day of the session, including student loan assistance for Alaska teachers, a wide-ranging crime bill, and a measure placing limits on campaign contributions in state elections. Firefighters have cut a line around a 15-acre wildfire south of Delta Junction to keep it from spreading, but it took a couple of days for 8 smoke jumpers, 2 fire crews, and local volunteer firefighters to prevent the Sawmill Creek fire from spreading. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
State Forestry and Fire Protection Division spokesperson Sam Harrell said the fire started Monday when high winds kicked up embers from an old burn near the northern portion of the Delta Agricultural Project, about 25 miles southeast of town.
Winds did carry that fire into the forested state land at the north end of the agriculture project there. That same evening, there were passing storm cells, and that really helped to scatter embers from the fire also.
On Tuesday, high winds again kicked up embers on the eastern edge of the fire, but the crews from White Mountain and the Tanana Chiefs region knocked it down. A Forestry News release said they continued working Wednesday on widening the saw line and laying down more hose. Harrell said they had to move carefully through the area to avoid injuries from falling trees.
The real concern is the fire weakened trees and the winds bringing those trees down on firefighters working in the area. They really need to be cautious about that.
He said the smoke jumpers were sent back to their base on Fort Wainwright on Tuesday after they and the 2 crews completed cutting a line around the fire and putting out hot spots across the Gerstle River ignited by embers from the main fire.
We always want to free up the smoke jumpers because they're a very valuable asset, and we always want to have them ready to go to the next emerging fire.
Harrell said the firefighters will continue extinguishing hotspots within the perimeter. The 2 crews will continue putting out the hotspots while monitoring the area around the fire because it's burning in a high priority area with dozens of homes, farms, and livestock herds.
It's going to take a while because this is a 100% suppression fire. They're going to make sure that there's no heat, no smoke, no nothing left on this fire.
Harrell said they'll be watching closely for any other hot spots that may be kicked up by winds that are forecast for today and Friday. He said the Forestry Division has suspended burn permits in the Delta area and in 3 areas around Fairbanks. The wildfires in the Delta Ag Project and in 2 military training areas near Fort Greely and Eielson Air Force Base were the first that state and federal firefighting agencies have responded to so far in the region in the 2026 fire season. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
It's National Safe Boating Week, and the U.S. Coast Guard search and rescue teams in Juneau are asking residents to help prevent false alerts. A false alert is any time the Coast Guard's search and rescue systems are activated when there is no real emergency. But responders still have to treat it like it is one, says U.S. Coast Guard Arctic District Master Chief Greg Slusher.
If we can't get a hold of somebody in a pretty timely fashion, we've got to assume that, you know, we're dealing with distress and we'll launch appropriately.
False alerts happen often in southeast Alaska, according to the Coast Guard. And when they do happen, it takes up emergency response resources, which are already limited and can endanger Coast Guard responders. False alerts can happen in a few different ways. In southeast Alaska, unmanned kayaks and paddleboards are often washed out into the water, and someone reports it as a possible overturned vessel.
If we get that reported to us, we have to assume somebody was on it and fell off of it at some point, and so we're going to open up a search and rescue case and look into that further.
Slusher advises people to write their names and phone numbers on their kayaks and paddleboards so that emergencies can be ruled out quickly if the boats slip away accidentally. The Coast Guard also responds to emergency beacons or satellite communicators that have been triggered accidentally. Slusher says that's one reason why it's important to keep emergency position indicating radio beacons or EPIRBs registered and up to date.
We've all probably had our phone go off, and the next thing you know, you're calling 911 by accident. The best thing is to follow up and say, hey, I'm sorry, this is an accident. No harm, no foul.
Slusher says anyone can call the Coast Guard to report an accidental false alert at 1-855-406-8724. And as always, he advises people to share their boating plans with loved ones. A new exhibit at the Anchorage Museum takes visitors inside an Arctic research vessel. Since opening last week, it's given guests a chance to glimpse what it's like to study an Arctic marine ecosystem. Alona Niden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Rachel Bosenberg is associate curator at the Anchorage Museum. She's walking under a tall crane with deep blue all around her.
So you enter here through the stern of the vessel, and you can see the different science instruments that folks would use on the back.
Bosenberg is given a tour of the new exhibition called Arctic Marine Science, Sikuliak to Shore, which brings the audience aboard a replica of the research vessel, Sikuliak. After boarding the ship, visitors pass the lab and dining area and make their way onto the bridge. Here, the captain's chair faces an array of monitors showing various marine conditions and a ceiling-high projector screen with a vast ocean that changes from stormy swells to chunks of pancake ice.
We're looking off the bow of Sikuliak, which visitors at this point have walked through the whole ship.
Sikuliak is operated by the University of Alaska Fairbanks and owned by the National Science Foundation. Each year, dozens of scientists from across the country and the world board the vessel to traverse the northern waters off Alaska's coast and study the Arctic. They collect samples from the seafloor, send remotely operated vehicles to the least accessible parts of the ocean, and deploy hydrophones to record sounds of marine mammals. Brendan Smith is the communications director at the North Pacific Research Board that funds many projects run from the vessel. He dreamed up the idea for the exhibition.
I think it was around 2020 when I said to myself, what if we bring the Sikuliak into the museum? How do we do that? How do we give people an experience that makes them feel like they're out at sea?
Smith says the result is an immersive experience focused on how the ship is used to study the environment and the people who bring that knowledge to life. The replica includes microscope station to look at plankton, a gallery of Arctic-themed illustrations, and sketching tables for children and adults. Smith, who attended the exhibit's opening, says it blends science and art.
It was beautiful. Seeing science, seeing how people can learn about the science, but also appreciating the beauty in plankton and diatoms and creatures that are so tiny that you need a microscope to see. And when you see them, you're just like, I can't believe there are things like that in the ocean.
And there is a station with Arctic soundscapes.
That's a bowhead whale.
Bosenberg with the museum says these are the sounds that scientists gather using hydrophones they deploy from the real vessel.
And the personal favorite, the otherworldly sounding bearded seal.
She says that another big part of the exhibition is the community-focused gallery that shows how scientists collaborate with coastal communities and indigenous knowledge holders to look at the changing environment.
Everything is interconnected, and every part matters, every voice matters.
Harmony Jade Sugik-Wainer is an indigenous scholar from Naknek in southwest Alaska. She consulted on the exhibition and suggested curators include what Arctic research means for Alaska Native people who are a part of the ecosystem.
We see a lot of big graphs about climate change and the extent of sea ice and those big global processes, but we don't see the joy of living our culture in coastal Alaska and river Alaska.
The exhibition runs through April 2027 on the first floor of the Anchorage Museum. There are also science demonstrations and activities on Thursday and Saturday afternoons. In Anchorage, I am Alona Knighton.
CrabFest, hosted by the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce, has been a part of Kodiak since 1958 and is a celebration of the abundant resources our community receives from the sea. Join in the fun, May 21st through the 25th. Visit KodiakCrabFest.com for a full list of events scheduled during the festival. Contact the Chamber of Commerce at 907-486-5557 with all your CrabFest questions.
A comfortable home starts with the right heating setup, and many Alaskans are turning to heat pumps. Households from Metlakatla to Kodiak could be eligible for heat pump installation assistance through the Accelerating Clean Energy Savings Program. More information is available at akheatsmart.org. This message is supported by a grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Climate Pollution Reduction Grants. ACES comes to you courtesy of Southeast Conference, Alaska Heat Smart, and the Alaska Municipal League.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 21st day of May, the year 2026, first day of Crab Festival. The sun rose today at 5:34. It will set again at 10:39. That will give us 17 hours and 5 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 42 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 69 degrees, set in 1993, and our record low was 30, set in 1985. It is currently 48 degrees, just a few clouds, south winds at 9 miles per hour at the airport, and they have 10 miles of visibility there. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies today, maybe some scattered showers. South winds continuing up to 15, gusting to 25. And for tonight, more scattered showers, mostly cloudy skies, overnight low about 40, south winds continuing at 15 or 20, gusting to 30. And for tomorrow, partly sunny skies, again, maybe some scattered showers for the next few days, but they are also predicting partly sunny skies for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and just a likelihood of showers for Monday. We are at low tide right now, or will be in about 5 minutes. That is going to be an extremely low tide. It is way out there, minus 1.1 feet, followed by a high tide this evening of 7:20. That will be a 6.7 foot tide. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 12:58 this afternoon, about a half hour, and be minus 1.3 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:35 p.m. of 12 feet. Your moon is at 30.5%. It is waxing. Mariners, be aware, we have a small craft advisory through Friday for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, south 30, becoming southwest 25 tonight, 10-foot seas today and tonight on our east side. For tomorrow, southwest 25 and 9-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight, south 30, becoming south 25 tonight, 7-foot seas coming down to 6 feet tonight. For tomorrow in the Shelikof, southwest 20 and 5-foot seas. Just outside of the city of Kodiak in Chiniak Bay, small craft advisory through tonight, south 25 for today and tonight, 4-foot seas coming down to 3 feet tonight. For tomorrow in Chiniak Bay, southwest 20, seas at 3 feet. There is a new pedestrian crosswalk system installed in front of Safeway now. The crosswalk is equipped with pedestrian-activated push buttons, and when activated, flashing warning lights on both crosswalk signs will illuminate to notify approaching motorists that pedestrians are crossing. Motorists are reminded to use caution when driving through the area and to yield to pedestrians when the warning lights are flashing. Pedestrians are encouraged to utilize the push button system before entering the crosswalk to improve visibility and enhance public safety. If you have any questions about any of this or have special needs, contact Public Works at 907-486-8060. Well, it's Crab Fest, and that means a lot's going on downtown. There are lots of people down there enjoying the food and the fun and the friends. And one of the highlights of Crab Fest is the Rendezvous Crab Fest stage at the mall. And it's going to be solid entertainment pumping out for free from the Crab Fest stage. Coming up at just at 1 o'clock in just a half hour will be DJ Mark of Island Style Entertainment, always playing upbeat music. That's always a lot of fun coming. And then after that will be This Is Me, featuring incredible talents Brennan, Peter, Kyra, Kathy, Hans, and Hannah. An uplifting and inspiring show featuring favorites and even an original song. Also, Mike Juarez, he's supposed to start at 3 p.m. on the stage. And he is from Houston originally. Don't forget about the Lego building contest and the hot dogs, brats, and Frito chili all at the Kodiak Elks Lodge. That's all available starting at 4 p.m. The pardoning of the crab will happen at 5 p.m., and Miss Alaska will officially be here to pardon the king crab from the pot for now. And also on the stage, DJ Has Kodiak's Groove will begin scheduled at 5:45, I believe, or 6 p.m. So lots of great fun things happening down at the Crab Festival. And because it is Crab Fest, that means the Kodiak Public Library Association's annual Crab Fest book sale will be happening. That begins tomorrow and it runs through Saturday, 10 to 4 p.m. at the historic barn next to the Kodiak Public Library. $5 a bag. Cannot beat that deal. Also, the Crab Fest blood drive going on starting today, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Kodiak Marketplace. Did you know that one pint of blood can save 3 lives? Don't forget to hydrate and eat before you donate, and make an appointment. Call Tara Cup at 907-942-7117 if you plan to donate blood, and she can help make it all smooth and comfortable for everyone. Things happening at the library include the Lapsit Storytime, but they're not going to have that tomorrow. I'm sure that's because of Crab Fest. Friday at 3 p.m. is still Lego Club. Children under 10 must bring an adult. And Saturday, they have Game Lounge beginning at 1 p.m. Games for all ages. Come to the library and play one of their board games, or you can borrow one to take home.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.